on today's Compassion Radio.
There was not one person that I met, and we went through this camp for hours and hours and roamed from one district to the next. Not one person had not walked at least 200 to 300 miles.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Well, friends, welcome to Compassion Radio. It is so great to have you along with us today, and we are grateful that you are there. Joining us in studio today, Cher Nelson. Hello, Cher.
Hi there.
And also joining us, of course, is Bram Floria. Bram, how are you today, sir?
Good day to you, Jimmy. I'm doing well. The weather is good in Texas, if you don't mind 110 degrees.
And if you do?
Then you want to be where your studio is. Sunny California.
Bram, you are recently back from quite a trip where you logged quite a bit of airline miles. Why don't you kind of give us a thumbnail sketch as to where you've been?
Hey, this is my first chance to really truly step in the boot prints of Norm. I was invited because Norm was not available to go someplace and with someone that has a great love for this ministry and has been a great friend of the ministry's family for many, many years. That was Jim Jennings. He's been on the program a number of times, as you know. He was setting out to do something he had never done. With Conscience International, he was doing an assessment trip to the central part of Eastern Africa, and specifically the hub of Uganda. Why Uganda? Because it's right now at the crossroads of about four or five major conflicts in Africa that are just not making the news. Now, we've worked with Conscience International in a lot of ways before, and as Norm has so eloquently put together his trips with Jim, they've gone to the very front lines of wars in Syria, Iraq, Sudan, Cairo. I mean, all kinds of places where there's an intersection of very slender faith in Christ holding its own against a sea of cultural and religious animosity. So the two of them were formidable. They would go together in a way and in a mode of great faith and lots of prayer and a willingness to step in wherever they were invited to go. And the funny thing was they kept getting invited into places. And so this trip was really no different in that regard because Jim is fearless. And I got to watch him in action the way he would work with Norm all those years. When we got to Uganda, the first stop was to meet a, as we would say, an unofficial diplomat. There was a man named Jack Ellis who had previously been a mayor in Macon, Georgia, who had signed on with the honorary consulate program in the United States. And what that means is different regions of the states have kind of like a chamber where people who have political experience and a willingness to travel can represent the interests of different regions of the United States to specific countries or regions. And this man, Jack Ellis, had a real love for the countries of Ghana and Uganda. And so as a representative of the Southeast United States based in Atlanta, he was the honorary consul for the United States.
This is something that Norm aspired to greatly, but could never keep himself in one place long enough to do it. But
you do have to show up for a lot of meetings in the stateside with people
that's
do this work.
But that was a dream of his always, to be able to be in that kind of work. And be able to bring the gospel into those circles.
And he would have had a great time with Jack Ellis because he was a personality that was outsized. The man was a politician par excellence, a Vietnam veteran. And so the man just had a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm and a big old boisterous American spirit. But he also had a lot of friends in government. So, of course, Jim was using Jack as access to people of influence and places of authority. And we hit it off pretty well, too, along the way. So we became kind of a fearsome foursome. One gentleman traveled along with Jim on this trip from the East Coast, and his name was Gail Anderson. He's the former director of hospital operations at Harbor Medical out there in Los Angeles area and had a long history of hospital administration and doctoring across the United States. So he was well-respected in that regard, and he's been a great supporter of Conscience International over the years. So the two of them were tight. They'd done some travels already through Turkey and other parts that were hard to get into in the Middle East. And so I was kind of the squeaky wheel joining for the first time. So these guys knew each other pretty well. Jack was new to them, and so was I. And we had to kind of forge quickly a team out of the four of us, and we did. We piled ourselves into a forerunners and ran all around the country and saw lots of different things. But the first stop was the Prime Minister's office. So we are barely past our jet lagged first night's rest, and we get ourselves all gussied up in a real tie and a real jacket, and we go down to the Prime Minister's office in the center of Kampala. And of course, like most military governments in Africa, you have a political arm which has some authority, but it's not the final say on things. The president's office, which is usually very closely tied to the military, would have the final say on anything. And we understood that there'd be limitations of the kind of permissions we could get, but it is important to make the connections so that people know what you're doing and respect publicly that you're there to do something good and that you're not being suspected of some other kind of nefarious deeds while you're in the country. So in the office of the Prime Minister, we actually sat down with him personally because Jack knew him. And we had a great, lovely visit over tea and talked about what we were there for. And that was to assess what could be done to help the refugee crisis, especially in northern Uganda. Now, northern Uganda is being poured into right now. It seems like half of South Sudan is now living in northern Uganda because of this, as they said, it was kind of a cascading refugee crisis. During the war with the main part of Sudan, South Sudan became a refugee camp of its own as people fled the north to come back toward the south to be safe there. Mm-hmm. Now, that meant that there was probably a million or more Sudanese that were living in South Sudan now that didn't want to stay there. They wanted to go back to their homes, but now they couldn't at all because the break with Sudan was so abrupt and so violent and so full of animosity. So now these tribes, which are more primarily black or sub-Saharan African in heritage, were now stuck with this overload of people from the north. And then it takes all of 5 months for the internal disputes within the tribes of South Sudan to break out into full civil war. Mm-hmm. And as of last year, about 2.5 million of them were on the march to leave South Sudan to head to Uganda for safety. It's just been a mess. So there we go. You know, Uganda is one of the only countries in the world that has an open refugee policy. Now think about that. It's a military dictatorship. It has a president for life who's, you know, he's changing the constitution right now to make sure he can stay in office forever. However, as a military government, Museveni and his people in government and all the elected officials in the political wing have agreed that Uganda would remain free to refugees. Which is it's an extraordinary statement to make for any government in Africa to say, we'll take anybody.
It is. Is there a reason for that, Bram?
Well, primarily because there's not a person in government or military that at one time or another in the past 30 or 40 years has not also been a refugee.
So is it really an altruistic type thing, or is there another reason behind it?
I'm sure there's real politics involved somehow in that they're trying to keep the best of the people within watch and make sure they hold the borders tight against those they don't want. But I do believe that there's a real sense that we all have been refugees, and all the tribes that are pouring in are people that also live across the border here already. So there are all kinds of tribal groups and kingdoms that overlap all of these national borders that the British and the Belgians and the French imposed, you know, 200 years ago.
Right.
So for them, it's kind of a homecoming of people that they already know. And these tribes are absorbing them with great zeal and with great passion. These are our people. We need to take care of them. Now, the camp that we visited in the north by the permission and blessing of the government was what's known as the Bidi Bidi camp. And it's now called a resettlement area, not just a camp. And that means that they have expectations that these people will not be able to be repatriated to South Sudan anytime soon. They're expecting a minimum, maybe of 5 to 10 years before things would settle down enough politically to think in terms of how these people could make it back. Now, this group that we visited was primarily from the wave of refugee emigrants that left South Sudan in the middle of last year and arrived at the refugee camp in Bidi Bidi around August of last year. They are just now finishing what we would call the year of firsts. And the people we travel with that came there to assess the psychological condition of the group was sensing everywhere that they really haven't finished the shock and mourning phase of being there. So that you have, in this one camp alone, at least 290,000 people. And they're not just crammed in tents that are, like, temporary. They're building huts around the tents that the UN had them build. So they have a certain constraint about the size they can use for their huts. But they actually have carved clay bricks out of the dirt around them. They've baked them in the sun. They've stacked them. They rip grass from the little ravines they can find to make thatch roofs for these things. But there's been, like, no materials given to them. They're living literally off the ground they're in, but nonetheless, they have made themselves a settlement. And by agreement, they decided how big each hut could be, how much land would be allocated for the huts within a little village or cul-de-sac, you might call it, and then how much land would be allocated for trying to grow crops. Now, most of the people that had stumbled into this particular camp were farm and herdsmen, so they are used to raising crops and raising livestock. There's no room for livestock in these camps. And, of course, none of the animals could survive the journey that they took. There was not one person that I met, and we went through this camp for hours and hours and roamed from one district to the next. Not one person had not walked at least 200 to 300 miles. So imagine being stuck across a border that's maybe 10 miles away, and you're deep in country in the Nuba Mountains or in central South Sudan near Juba, and suddenly this war breaks out and they start bombing all of the villages that are east of the capital to try to clean out the leaders of the resistance tribes, people that did not want to go with the first president, who was from the west part of the country. Imagine now that you've got tens of thousands of villages being firebombed, and people are running as quick as they can get ahead of the troops that are coming to burn their villages out. So the old men and some of the younger men that know how to herd are chasing their herds into the forest to hide them, trying to preserve what's left there and hoping that they'll be able to outlast the government troops. But there's no way they can move fast enough to save the animals. So they've got to try to hide them.
Thank you, friend, for listening to today's Compassion Radio. We'll get right back to this discussion in just a moment. Please stick with us for a timely announcement towards the end of our broadcast time today. We'll share about our ongoing project for the month of August called Christ in the Conflict, and also about our special premium we're offering for your support to this boots-on-the-ground daily radio ministry. Our phone number is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. And online, we can be found at CompassionRadio.com. Let's get back now to our program.
What you're left with is women, children, and babies that are on the march, and a very few select handful of young men helping them. Now, in this camp of about 290,000 people, I met in the entire day maybe a dozen young men that were between the ages of maybe 15 and 30.
Whoa.
All the rest were young women, old women, and young children. And these boys that were out playing soccer or trying to just do boy stuff around the camps, they do have schools for them, but you've got one school in the camp that services the entire 12 districts.
And your word school conjures up a picture that's not quite what they have.
Yeah, we'll get to the pictures here in a little while, but I just want to give it a scope of the thing right now. Yeah, it's they have schools, but again, they're not equipped. But we got to see where they actually are being taught. So these children are between the ages of 5 and maybe 12 are the vast majority of people in these camps. Imagine what it's going to be like in 5 to 10 years. You've got all these kids going through puberty, trying to figure out what their life means, what they're supposed to do with themselves. What is it like to be a man or woman? Just imagine what's going to happen in 10 years when families have to start declaring themselves as being a family. They're going to move out from their parents' house and have to have someplace to live. The camp's maxed out. So imagine what the second generation is going to face when they try to figure out what to do with their lives.
A lot of angry young men.
Could be. Now, again, this camp that we visited was just one of maybe a dozen in northern Uganda that are not a whole lot smaller than this one. So maybe 5 of the top 10 refugee camps in size in the world are inside Uganda. And that's not being reported really much anywhere that I've known. So our access was wide open to them. But again, this was just one trip. While we were in Uganda, we also spent time finding out what the needs were medically within the country of Uganda. Now, of the people that are registered refugees, you've got about 2.2, 2.5 million people in a country that's about the size of Oregon. They already have 40 million people or more, so about the size of the population of California, living in this area. And they're absorbing the registered refugees of at least 2.5 million people. It's similar numbers of what they're facing in the Middle East for these small population countries like Lebanon or Jordan, absorbing the weight of all the emigration coming out of Syria or Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine the load on the healthcare system for those who are not even registered and not in a camp. It turns out that there are at least maybe another million or more that are floating around in the country.
I'm sure.
And now, again, harken back to the open door policy. This is extraordinary to me. Not only has Uganda guaranteed the safety of refugees coming to camps, they have also, by law, guaranteed the civil rights of those who are not registered, who are residing as aliens in their country.
Whoa.
You know, Bram, I can see the pictures that you've posted, and they're just so full of color, so bright, just so beautiful. And in the limited amount of international travel that I've been able to go on, I've always just been stunned. And I know, Cher, you and Norm experienced this as well, as just the spirit of the people and the way they bounce back and just the joy that radiates. And I'm just kind of attracted to the smiles I see from some of the people on these photos.
Yeah. Smiles are everywhere. I did learn a couple things about the smiles, though. Smile is their first line of communication.
Mm.
They will greet each other from a distance with a smile, which means no fear. So it is literally like waving at somebody we would do in the West.
Mm.
So their teeth are their first line of communication. It does not mean that they're happy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of the people that I met had great faith that they would survive because they've already survived incredible things. And this includes people that are not registered, that are living in the cities. But getting to know them, eventually you find a place of commonality or some humor, and there'll be some smiles and laughter just from how you talk to each other or discover something silly about being American or whatever. But there's plenty of opportunity to connect with people on what would be a lighthearted basis.
Right.
But there, especially in this camp, there are plenty of pictures you see there where there's not a smile.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a hauntedness in most of those faces, especially the young people, and not the least because many of them are suffering blindness from either parasites or malnutrition along the way, and they're losing their sight progressively. So there's a mixture there, Jimmy. I mean, you got a lot of joy from people who know how to express themselves, but also one of those, how are you today, I'm fine kind of responses, you would get that in a smile. It may not be that they're really feeling happy. But I got to confess that what I saw was a lot more happiness or joy than I expected, for sure. These people are holding on to each other and building community in ways that are amazing. So next time we get together, let's start talking about some of these pictures, shall we?
Absolutely, Bram. I know just from experience how full your heart must be, how full your head must be, and how frustrated you must be at how do we help? What do we do? I've seen this. God has given me the incredible opportunity to experience this. Now, how? Where? Why? What do we do?
Yeah.
And I hope that our listening audience will pray with you as God leads you through these memories, through all of this information, and guides you as to what we as a people can do to be Christ's hands and feet from a distance. How do we reach out? What do we do? People, please cover Bram as the Lord speaks to him as to how we need to treat this information, how it needs to change us, how we need to change the situation, and how we can be a healing component in all of this. Bram, I hope you'll close out our program here by taking us all to the Lord and asking for his guidance in all of this.
Oh, there's no other way. Norm was always very specific that he knew he couldn't solve every problem. He couldn't be every place there was suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't going to save everybody. I said, but he always encouraged us when he got back from his trips that we can at least save that one, that next child, that next opportunity, the next person that God puts in your way. And we haven't even talked about the divine appointments that came along during this trip.
Mm-hmm.
There were a dozen of those which were phenomenal that are still bearing interesting conversations that God is beginning to put Compassion Radio in a place of influence with people that are doing things that are amazing. And we'll talk about that more.
Good.
So, yes, let's start with prayer, friends, and then we'll move on for the next few weeks telling the stories that might just change a few of your lives and put you in the frontline work as well. Dear Father in heaven, we thank you so much that you are a God of all peoples, that you have never forgotten your children, and you are calling children to you to be part of your kingdom from every tribe, every village, every language, every people group, every color on this planet.
Yes.
That you intend to fill heaven with all of your children, and you don't want to leave a single one behind. Mm-hmm. But you've also chosen to leave many behind for us to reach. And we need to do that, Lord. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of a better way to start right now but to ask you to lay on our hearts, supernaturally, the kind of compassion in our hearts that would lead to action that wins souls to you and addresses real suffering.
Yes.
We can only do some as people, but you can do all through your people. So I'm asking, Father, that you would give us insight for how we should address certain issues, how we should pass the baton to others who can pick up that and carry it forward. But all along the way, Lord, help us as Compassion Radio to bring the story in an honest, forthright, and genuinely compelling way so people can see what your kingdom is like all around the world and hopefully fall in love with these incredible people that you allow us to meet along the way. Thank you for allowing us to be hands and feet. And in this case, you allowed us to be eyes to help our people see what's going on in so many parts of the planet. So specifically, Lord, for Uganda, for Sudan, for Congo, for Rwanda, for Burundi, and for Ethiopia, and for Kenya, and for the countries outside there where there's so much conflict. Lord, the only thing people ask me to pray for and ask our people to pray for was that you would bring peace, that the kingdom of God can go about its work healing people. So they're asking us to pray for that, Lord. So I pray for it now. Thwart the plans of evil men, Lord. Stop these wars and bring people to a saving knowledge of you through people who are willing to rush in and be healers and peacemakers.
Yes.
In your name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
Bram, thank you for being our eyes and ears. Let's pick up this conversation on tomorrow's Compassion Radio.
Thank you, Jimmy. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Bram, typically when we turn over to a new month, we have a new project that we present to our listeners. But in this particular situation, as we continue here in the summer of 2017, we're staying on the theme of Christ in the conflict, trying to support a Ukrainian pastor who's really on the front lines.
And I'm glad that we are. I mean, there's a reason why we decided to carry this one over, and it's two parts. One is, we managed to fund the first year of pastor work there in Ukraine because of the generous giving of our partners. So we're thrilled about that. Normally, that would be the finish line for any given month's project, would be funding whatever our project idea was. But here's the thing. The conflict's not going anywhere, and it is exactly the kind of project that we keep stumbling into this month. I mean, All About Uganda was all about conflicts. There are probably going to be some projects we do in the future with people that are actively doing things on the ground there, but they're not ready yet. But Ukraine is going to continue to be a sore spot in Europe. It's going to continue to be an opportunity that's ripe for action and for results. And because things are getting less certain with what Russia's doing in eastern Ukraine and the Crimean area, it's still a dangerous hot spot. And I can't think of anybody who deserves to get a little more support than Oleg and the folks at New Life Community there in Kyiv. The whole Hope community there in the war zone of eastern Ukraine is essential. And we could send more pastors there if we were able to fund them. The second thing is that this is the summer months, and people don't tend to retool and regroup every month as frequently or as quickly as they would do in the rest of the year. And so I frankly wanted to save another $5,000 to $10,000 and not send out a whole other letter this month. So instead of spending that money on sending out a new letter, I thought, let's focus on continuing this project and deepening it. Maybe get another year's worth of support for a pastor. Maybe building a new orphanage, because they've got two or three buildings they actually use as orphanages there now. I don't want people to think we're not doing something this month. We're doing more this month. I want to see Oleg and his team succeed like they've never succeeded before. And so I want to focus again on what's happening in eastern Ukraine, kind of like we've done other parts of the year with our Bibles for China campaign or other things where we've seen a real response that's been very positive and there are more opportunities to get more Bibles in places. Of course, we'll keep doing that. Ukraine is like that right now. There are so many opportunities to really reach new people, Russian people, Ukrainian people for Jesus, and start new churches throughout that region of the world that is one of the most secularized places on the planet. Does that make sense, Jimmy?
It does. It does. And Bram, I understand that we're going to continue with our very special premium offer DVD for this month, a film that's just wildly popular. Mm. It's amazing. And I know there's a really good reason why you chose it, too.
War Room is a great film. It goes right to the core of what it means to be a powerful and effective Christian. And it's a great tale, but it's also a very true story. Whenever God's people discover the power of prayer, things start happening. Why? Because God starts laying on the hearts of the people who are willing to pray the things that He wants prayed. And think about this. If God wants something done, He tends to inspire His people to pray for those things so that they can work in tandem together, in cooperation. And this story, War Room, is all about what it means to go to spiritual warfare and suit up for battle.
Awesome. Well, once again, this is continuing to be our very special premium for the month of August. Friends, we would love to hear from you.
For your special gift of $50 or more, we'd love to send you, on DVD or Blu-ray, the powerful and highly successful theatrical release of War Room. Order yours today, and thank you so much for standing with us. Reach out to us by phone at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. By mail, we're at Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And you can always find us online at CompassionRadio.com. On behalf of Bram Floria, Cher Nelson, and the entire Compassion Radio team, I'm Jim Governale. Have a wonderful day in the Lord, and we'll see you again next time with more Compassion Radio.